Welcome to Two Main Street. I'm David James, and I'm wearing my NPR Radio Nerd t-shirt. So what's the difference between a nerd and a geek? Well, my two guests are self-described Comic-Con geeks, Todd Fox and Ted Haycraft. Now, Todd is a comic book artist who's been drawing comics for nearly 30 years for comics publishers Marvel, Image, Now, and Eclipse. His current project is AIM Geronimo and the Postmodern Pioneers. Now, Ted Haycraft, we've talked to Ted before. He's a local movie reviewer who is frequently seen on WFIE's midday program with his cinema chat and on social media platforms with his movie commentaries. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you, David.
Good to have you here. Now, Todd and Ted will help explain the culture of comics, superheroes, and the fun and excitement of going to a Comic Con convention. And guys, we have one coming to Evansville soon.
Right, yes. We had this is the museum here, put one on last August. Really successful. So they're going to go expand it to 2 days this year and in August, 25th and 26th. And Todd's going to be a guest there as a local artist. And we're going to have panels, and one of our friends, I think one of our friends is going to be doing a panel. Remember Buckaroo Banzai we talked about?
Yeah.
On that, I think he's going to be doing a whole panel on that movie. the one that you were kind of baffled by.
Yes, I'm still baffled by it.
I need to get you a copy of that so you can watch that. But yeah, and there'll be cosplay going on and vendors and comic books for sale and all kinds of stuff. So it's something, it's a city this size of Evansville, I'm hoping that it should be able to support a comic convention. They've come and gone. Different people have tried it, and hopefully, maybe this will be a consistent one that keeps going for a while.
Well, especially we've got a city that supports three comic stores, so yeah. Hopefully, we can build that audience.
Well, Todd, what's cosplay?
Cosplay is a term short for costume play. Ted, is that exactly right?
That's the way I understand it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a cosplayer myself.
Okay. But,
we go about as far as t-shirts, you know, and then
we go about as far as t-shirts. But it's some folks some of these folks are Hollywood level in terms of what they produce. Some would argue they're even better than some of the Hollywood folks come up.
Well, even some cosplays are professionals, cosplayers now. I mean, they actually are invited to the shows as guests.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's just like every medium, the access to what you can do special effects-wise and costume-wise and the material and how you can put it together is just amazing. It's just as good as you see in the film sometimes.
Well, you guys are no longer teenagers.
Thank you.
And well, I'm not even.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. And yet you represent the Comic-Con crowd, so young and older folks enjoying this genre.
Absolutely.
All ages.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. When you go to these shows, you'll see families involved in these events. So, and like I say, we're hoping for that with the Evansville show, the museum show as well.
The cliche, if we want to bring up that old cliche, comic books aren't for kids anymore.
Well.
usually every article now, you know, they're finally slowing down, but they use biff, pow, comic books aren't for kids anymore because the Batman show, the stigma of that, you know, the campiness of it, and comic books were a throwaway medium for kids. But it's all over the place now.
I think what has happened, David, is that guys of our generation are now in Hollywood creating the product, creating the media, and they have nothing but love for that, the medium and the source material. So,
well, now we used to think of Comic Con as a kind of a counterculture event. Now it is becoming more mainstream.
Absolutely, it's everywhere. I mean, Ted and I have talked about this for hours and hours. About you go to Target, you go to any store, and you'll see T-shirts, cups. It's just the merchandise is everywhere. It's just completely saturated the mainstream. But the curious thing is most people are not really into the source material, but they like all the comic book superhero imagery and the merchandise. It's curious that way.
A lot of those cosplayers that we're talking about, sometimes they don't even watch the movies or read the comics. They're into the whole look and the making of the costume and stuff. We just came off the weekend, San Diego Comic-Con, which is it's just a huge thing now. I mean, Entertainment Weekly spent a double issue devoted to it. and exclusives were coming out all the time. So new trailers of the movies, and they had all these stars out there. It's just, it's unbelievably how big it's gotten.
Yeah, in fact, I have a newspaper article about it right now. Yeah. It was like 130,000 people attended that event in San Diego. And here's a kind of a description of it. The four-day comic book convention attracts some 130,000 souls every year who come for the swag. What's the swag?
That's basically merchandise. Sometimes they'll have a bag full of
posters. Free exclusive comic books, badges, buttons, postcards, and if you pay for the VIP. Okay. Package, you get all this extra goodies, and then even there's even extra goodies to be found at tables and at different vendors if you get there in time, and they have
promotional items.
Yeah. That's like going to the home show and coming home with a bag of rulers and magnets and things like that. Yep. Yeah, it says here that they come for the swag, the parties, the exclusives, the stars, the wild experience of being with like-minded and often costumed pop culture fanatics. That pretty well sums it up. It
really is, yeah. But, right. You know, and that thing's been around, what, Ted, 30?
Long time, a long 30 time.
30-plus years, or more, 40 years, maybe. I'm not sure.
It started in the 70s.
Started in the 70s, yeah. We know that much. But it started with something that was basically like the museum show coming up, a small venue, a relatively small venue in a hotel, and it's just grown to this. What I think, as my understanding, I've never been, it's almost too big for me. because it's, I think what I've heard it described as, it's actually like several conventions in one. It's a gaming convention. It's a video game convention. Then you've got the Hollywood media presence that comes and premieres movies, and they promote shows and have all the stars, and they fly them down from Los Angeles. And people come. I was watching somebody's video from San Diego, and they were talking. This was 9 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night, and they were showing the line forming for some event that was going to be happening at 9 o'clock the following
sometimes
day.
You're waiting the whole day just for one panel to go see
to get a good
Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something like that. You
know? So you've been to several of these, Ted?
Oh yeah, we started. Jim Alexander and I, my best friend, his grandparents took us over to Louisville for the first one, RiverCon 1, over in Louisville, and that was like the 76, 77, something like that. And we've been going ever since. So we started really going full steam in the 80s with Chicago. There was one called Chicago Comic Con. It was basically the second biggest one to San Diego. The New York Con had kind of died out. San Diego was starting to build up steam. It wasn't what it was then, the 80s, but it was getting there. And we were going to Chicago every year. That's our budget could allow. We didn't have a budget to get out to San Diego. And Todd, that's when Todd joined us. But and the three of us would be hitting Chicago every summer.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I was growing up, comic books were better known as funny books. Now, the Archie comics have evolved, or some say they may have devolved. Now, Todd Fox, you're a comic book creator and artist. And so what is the state of the comic book today?
You know, I wouldn't categorize it as anything goes. The American product has been mainly the most output, or maybe the most successful output, is superheroes from your two big publishers, Marvel and DC. And obviously the mainstream has accepted that and embraced it. But you still have other publishers out there. Archie is still around. And, you know, they have their traditional Archie comics with the teens.
Is Jughead still?
To my knowledge, I haven't kept up with those as much, but they're in a kind of a curious state where they're doing more horror elements, which I think is a part of this new show that they have called Riverdale, which is Archie and the gang, and they're like investigating supernatural events.
Ooh,
I think
Scooby-Doo,
I haven't seen the show. Yes, kind of. It sounds like it to me. But yeah, so you've got several different publishers, and you know, I tell you, that's the other thing too. It's not just superheroes. There's a wide range of product out there, and I think that's the thing that people may be surprised about, that comic books are actually a medium, not necessarily a genre, but they certainly can embrace all of those things.
Now, there's certainly an army of superheroes in the comics. Did that all start with Superman?
Superman. It was ground zero.
Superman's ground zero. There were comic books before Superman, but Superman, the big thing, he was the first superstar, or even star, of comic books. There were other characters in comics, but there were comic strips. And stars in comic strips are merchandise from characters from comic strips. But Superman was the first character that was a major success in the medium of comic books.
If I may, like 1933, it's basically they discovered, hey, we could take these comic strips, kind of fold them together to a different little bit of a pamphlet, eventually charge 10 cents for them, and kids will buy them. And they were basically coming from they were drawing from the comic strips, the Sunday papers. Then they said, well, maybe we can get some original material in here. And they started doing some original material. And basically that was pulling ideas from the strips and the pulp magazines. Remember the pulp magazines? But that's where Conan the Barbarian was in.
Tarzan was a Conan. Zorro. They were all pulp characters.
Would that be like the detective series too?
Yeah, eventually. In fact, one was the Sam Bradley was predates Superman. Was an original detective in the comic book and the detective comics and action comics. So and then all of a sudden they decide these two teenagers they really wanted to break into the comic strips. And they've been trying their darndest. The DC National Periodicals, I think it was called them National Periodicals, they decided to go ahead and do the Superman. And that's where it changed the whole field. There was an explosion of superheroes after that.
So what about comic book sales? Are they stagnant?
I confess that I'm not completely up on the sales themselves. I hear that the some places, in some ways, maybe the sales have never been better, but you just can't deny that now comics are a boutique item. I would categorize it. You have to go to special stores for that. You can't get them. Rarely can you see them at newsstands where when I was a kid. You
know, what's a newsstand?
that's right. A whole different show, I guess.
Right. But think about this. The comics used to sell in the millions. You know, but this is pre-cable, pre-video games, pre-VHS tapes, pre-all this stuff, and they were selling in the millions. And now I don't know what it tops out at now, but you know, I think a lot of kids that start reading comic books, and even professionals that got into comic books, they were homesick. The mom and dad had run to the grocery store or run to the drugstore, and they grabbed a few comic books and brought them home for the kid to read, and they got hooked.
That's right.
And they were you'd be able to find them. Now, you know, a parent can't really find a comic book. Barnes & Noble and some of the bookstore chains have tried to carry some, but they've given them up almost. There's a whole routine and racket now that the comic book stores have that carry them. But they're not as readily available in the eyesight of everybody that they used to be. But Walmart just did a little experiment where they put some new ones in to Walmart. But I think all the comic book fans ran and got them as opposed to the non-comic book fans. Right. But, you know.
We're talking to Ted Haycraft, local movie reviewer, and Todd Fox, a comic book artist. So, guys, a lot of that energy from comic books is now going into the big screen.
Absolutely.
I mean, those characters are now more popular than ever in a wider audience.
And on the TV screen, too.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really penetrating, I should say, all across media. Yeah.
If you could go back in time and talk to me when I was 8 years old and tell me what was going on in the movies now, my head would explode. I would not believe it.
Yeah. What do you think about as a game changer, the Batman movie in 1989, Tim Burton's Batman with Nicholson as the Joker, was that kind of a game changer?
Funny that you would ask, because I kind of made a little chart. I have a little history. I have a little chart about that. I think the first game changer was Superman in 78. Right,
78.
Superman. That we finally got to a point where you could see a guy, you could believe a man can fly. That was the promotional tag, and there was a little spurt of movies there. Then the Batman 89 came along, and that was a next evolution. Whereas we were still under the stigma of Batman TV show, you know, being campy, silly. Mm-hmm. Batman's for kids, and comic books are for kids. So then Tim Burton does this really dark and really quirky Batman movie, and the merchandising was out. And then again, we had another spurt. But I really think that we get to the game changer that really started changing things is the X-Men movie in 2000, I think.
That sounds right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's been long enough now.
Yeah.
We've had so many. You've got to think back.
10 years is the Marvel Universe movies, right?
Yeah, right.
So the X-Men movie comes along. Bryan Singer directs that. And finally, with that, the special effects and the attention and the creativity and treating it as serious material, I mean, somewhat, really kicked into gear. And I think we're under that era now from the X-Men movie on. And then along comes Iron Man in 2008. And also we have this new paradigm change where we've had series and sequels and, you know, movies that kind of tie into each other. But also we have a series of movies that build into a universe, and each one plays into the other one, and it builds up and builds up, and we have, you know, and climaxes, and then starts over again, and everything ties in together. But the bottom line is the computer CGI. If we got to a point where you could translate what you saw on the page into the big screen, which was that was the biggest hurdle. Mm-hmm. It took forever to get through that.
The technology, basically, you can put this comic book material on, you can make it believable on screen. Yeah.
Now we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp, Aquaman's coming out. So are we running out of superheroes, guys?
Oh,
No. I guess if you can make a super blockbuster out of things like Guardians of the Galaxy, which in the comics is pretty, it's second or third tier, really. Iron Man actually was kind of a B or C level.
But who knew Iron Man was? But, I mean, have you ever heard Iron Man?
No. But, there's thousands of characters out there. Hey, there's Aim Geronimo for that matter.
Somebody
wants to talk to me.
Well, tell us about this character.
Aim Geronimo is she's a Native American.
Now, this is your creation.
This is my creation along with my co-creator, John Morgan Neal. He lives in Texas. Aim Geronimo is a Native American. She's just a next generation brain. She's super smart, and she gets involved in adventures. She's got a team of specialists and experts in their field, and they go around and explore, and they end up fighting bad guys and all kinds of fun stuff. So,
is it Black Panther-ish?
Are you familiar with Doc Savage? You remember Doc Savage at all?
No.
It's like Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah.
We were talking about Buckaroo Banzai. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Buckaroo Banzai.
Or Indiana Jones. I know you hate to do that.
It's Indiana Jones, Buckaroo Banzai gets involved in weird adventures.
The thing about the great thing about his strip is that it can jump into all different genres.
Okay.
He can take it anywhere he wants. He can make it a mystery, or he can make it a huge, giant, epic adventure, or just a very personal story. You know?
Well, is it social in any way because it's a Native American?
It's got that option. We can do mm-hmm. that too. And there's some elements built in. We've got a few stories so far, but we haven't gotten to the any political elements yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's there. That's one of the things that I like about the concept. Mm-hmm. So,
well, my guests are Todd Fox and Ted Haycraft. And coming up, what goes on at a Comic-Con convention? Do you have to wear a costume to get inside? And what is maybe your superhero avatar? 2 Main Street is presented by Evansville Regional Airport. We're talking about the Comic-Con convention in Evansville, and I guess the whole culture of superheroes. Now, the comics have gone to the movies. We've talked about that. Disney bought Marvel in 2009 for $9 billion, and they've made some money on that investment, guys. And now Warner Brothers has the DC Comics franchise. Is that right?
Right. DC was bought up by Warner Brothers back a while ago. It's always been the big two, you know, Marvel and DC. So now Disney has Marvel and Warner's has DC. But there's a lot of other companies and characters out there, but that's the big two.
Mm-hmm. Now, we glean all these characters from these comic books. Are original characters emerging as well?
It depends on how you define that.
Yours is an original character.
Well, right. Yeah, mine's an original character.
By breaking through or making
breaking through into the mainstream. Mark Miller. He's a comics creator who created the Kingsman movies, and he was the there was a character there was a well. Kick-Ass. He created Kick-Ass. Then I think he also created the movie Wanted that had Angelina Jolie in it. That was based on a comic.
They're always trying. They're always trying to come up with original and new material. It's just hard to get over the hump of Fantastic Four and Spider-Man, Batman, Superman. They're so established. I mean, Superman's 75 years old.
80
years old. Yeah. And it's just it's hard. But it's interesting because we got people out there. Actually, it's going. They're doing a comic book just to get into the movies now. They don't even really care. I mean, it's almost like a
research and development.
Yeah, it's like a blueprint.
Okay. It's a proof of concept in a lot of ways.
I think the Tom Cruise Oblivion was sort of like that.
I heard that that it was actually a comics project that somebody had turned into a movie.
Yeah. So that's there's always going to be trying to do original, but it's so hard because when you start looking at all the explosion of the Marvel heroes were in the 60s with Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Steve Ditko. We always talk about this, like, who is, since the 60s, has become a major Marvel mainstay? Not that many. Wolverine, Punisher, Ghost Rider maybe, but it gets to, every decade, it's diminished more, seems like, because they have such this giant pantheon they have created that are so big.
So what's the fascination with anime? First of all, can you explain anime?
Well, we got to back up and go manga first, right?
Anime is Japanese animation, which is, I guess, an oversimplification, because I'm not totally conversant in that. But basically, it's animation from Japan. And here again, the animation from Japan, kind of like the manga, which is the comics of Japan. They are not into superheroes. 98% of American comic product. But in Europe and Japan, they don't really understand superheroes as we define them. They have everything. Golf comics. They have golf anime. Yeah, it's just a completely wide open field.
Materials are much different. I was going to say, if you go to Barnes & Noble and look at the anime, the manga, you say manga, I say manga. It's almost as big, if not bigger, than the American,
really is.
Our own section of comic books. Yeah. It's really? Huge.
There's and a huge audience.
There will be there's a convention every year. They're in their, I don't know how many years now, EvilCon. It's devoted to anime and manga, and they're successful. Every year they'll be set up at the Evansville Museum Show to help promote their convention, mm-hmm. and it's all devoted to that. I mean, it is crazy. When it started coming over, some of the American publishers did publish some of it, and there's some of it did kind of break through. One of our favorite things that Todd and I like is Akira. It's almost like the 2001 A Space Odyssey of anime. It's this huge epic cartoon. People go, that's just a cartoon, but it's amazing.
Very sophisticated, yeah.
So is the basic thing here good versus evil in comics? Or is that oversimplifying?
Well, I don't know. You might I think that's probably fair. That's probably fair. There is that classic struggle between good and evil. Yeah, it's certainly in the bulk of American product. Would you agree?
Yes, yeah. It's blurred because, you know, along came the James Bond films, the Man with No Name films, the anti-hero came along, and then they, you know, and then it got kind of dark in the 90s where they had like these dark and gritty heroes, and Batman's been psychotic at times, sure. You know, different Batmans. But no, that's basically, I was thinking this, it's interesting. I was thinking about how, you know, as kids, what informs us and what makes us as we grow up. And, you know, at Sunday school and your teachers. But comic books, Stan Lee and the artists that he worked with, there's a lot of things that Stan's outlook on the world, you know, Spider-Man.
Great power. With great power comes great responsibility. That's actually pretty profound stuff.
That's what Stan came up with. That's what Spider-Man figured out when he had the power, Peter Parker. And as a kid, you know, you start, and then to help to go out there and help everybody. Superman's helping people. Batman's helping people. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, it's like, wow, you know, it kind of informs you as a kid.
It's also a burden for these guys, too. It's a sacrifice. They have to give up things for this superpower.
Oh, yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Very much
so. They deal with that kind of angst.
Yeah.
And they try to balance their lives.
And as the writing got sophisticated, you know, over the decades, you know, it was a lot of stuff was just a throwaway market for kids. But then you got writers and artists that love the stuff. They grew up on it. So now they're writing the comic books, and they start bringing more sophistication.
They're more interested in the things that you were just mentioning, the angst and the sacrifice, right. Versus the, you know, chasing the Joker or chasing Dr. Doom again. They're interested in because there's sort of a joke now is that a lot of superhero comics are two superheroes standing on a roof talking for an issue versus going out and chasing Dr.
Okay.
Doom, you know, because these things, because as the creators and the audience have gotten older and a little bit more sophisticated, they want to see those elements brought into it. But then there's the pendulum swung that way because now they're saying, well, comics aren't for kids anymore. You know, the product, there's not as much content. Well, your average issue of Spider-Man may not be for kids anymore.
Well, speaking of that, Deadpool, that is certainly not for kids.
There you go. Yeah.
That has just gone off the deep end, I don't know how to describe Deadpool. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's it's raunchy.
It's so wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's profanity.
And he breaks the fourth wall. But that's the thing. I guess, like I said, it's all hands are off on what you could do with a comic book. I wonder, at some point we should talk about, there's a whole ton of comic book movies that are not superhero movies.
That's true.
Comic books like that, and Deadpool's just another aspect of it. And you know, I mean, parents are like, "Well, why can't I take my kids to it?" Well, this character is—he's an R-rated character. I mean,
and it's true to the comic, by the way.
Yeah.
The comic is
I didn't know that.
It's very true to the comic.
Yeah, he started out. It's actually the funny thing about him is he started out kind of just a regular bounty hunter type character or something, and then a writer came along and they started saying, well, this, let's just play with this character, do something with him. And he's one thing, they started breaking the fourth wall, you know, he started talking right to the readers and then making fun of the whole and the medium and playing with it, so that's what it started, and then it just took off, and now that's why we have two movies now of it.
Now what about these conventions? I mean, you know, there for a while they were, Saturday Night Live was making fun of these conventions. The William Shatner bit, you know,
right,
telling the convention goers to get a life and get out of their parents' basements and everything. That doesn't seem to bother people at all.
Not at all. I mean, I hear this all the time. Let your freak flag fly, you know, and it's that's going on. Like I say, you can buy the shirts at Target now. Everybody's buying.
It was not the case when I was a kid.
I was
a child of the 60s, and, you know, I would have to kind of downplay the fact that I was a comic book reader and collector. It was not the coolest thing. Now, being, you know, dabbling in artwork, you know, and everything, that was okay. You could be the artist of the class, you know. But still, there was still that whole, oh, you still read Batman, Superman, you know. It was a little bit tough. And the merchandising, it was just, you could count in one hand almost the merchandising back then. So anytime a T-shirt would come out, I would just, oh my gosh, I got to get that. Because now I see, you know, people coming at 2 a.m. at the Denny's, and I could name the artist who drew that T-shirt. And they only bought it because they liked the movie. They have never even touched a comic book.
Sure. You know? Well, people are celebrating this geekness and nerdiness. I mean, it's becoming, like you said, mainstream now.
Absolutely.
I met a guy the other day, a new employee where I work, and I said, well, so what are you into? What do you like? And he goes, and I goes, well, I'm a giant nerd. I go, okay, well, hello. I am. Join the club, you know.
Now, coming up, we're going to talk about what you're going to see at the Comic-Con convention at the Evansville Museum. And we're going to find out what Todd and Ted's favorite comic books are, and maybe they're superheroes. And what would be their comic avatar? We're going to talk about all kinds of things coming up. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. We're talking about the culture of comics and superheroes and the Geek and Comic Convention at the Evansville Museum. Again, those dates, Ted, for the convention?
August 25th and August 26th. On the Saturday, it's 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. On Sunday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m.
You got something else to plug, too.
Yes. I came up with the new guy at the charge of events at the library, Nathan Jockum. We kind of put our brains together and came up with this little film series to lead up to the convention. So August 7th, August 14th, August 21st, these are Tuesdays leading up to the show, I'm going to be moderating a film series. And we're going to be showing a films, Comic Book Confidential from 1988, Jack Kirby, a profile on Jack Kirby, the artist, and then American Splendor, which we could might want to talk about that at some point. That's a comic book movie, but it's not superheroes.
Well,
okay. And we're gonna have, I think we're gonna have some passes to give away and do some have some fun. We'll talk about comic books and I'll show that they start at 6 o'clock. Those first three Tuesdays in August, at Central Library.
Okay, let's get back to the convention now. At the convention at the Evansville Museum, there's going to be like an art gallery. Is that correct?
Ted's more involved with programming. I'll defer to him.
It's in the gallery itself. I mean, once you're in the museum, you can take advantage of, you know, checking out the whole Evansville Museum.
I thought maybe they had the comic book art.
No, I'm hoping at some point. That's one of my dreams. When I talked to the Karen Malone, who's in charge of this. I've talked about how I would like to do some more sharing of how the original art and talking about the whole creativity of it and the history of it. This is more along the lines. Karen's goal is to, you know, let's have a legit Comic-Con type atmosphere here, but it just happens to be set in our museum, you know, in Evansville.
But if they want to talk to me about the process, they can come over and talk to me.
There you go. There you go.
There you go. Well, we're going to do a Q&A panel with Todd and two other local creators, and I'm going to moderate that. And we're going to go through the whole gamut of, like, what's it like being a professional? What's it like self-publishing your own book? What's it like, you know, what's ups and downs? Can you do this for a living, or do you have to have a day job? You know, that whole all the ins and outs of that.
Is there, like, a costume contest?
Yes. I think we encourage Karen's encouraging costume play. I think there was one. Last year I was so busy. I had four panels I did. The whole day, it was just one day that I think I had 2 hours to myself to kind of just say hi to everybody and run back in to another panel. But I think they did have a costume play. But, you know, Karen Malone, call the museum, and there's an event page on Facebook for it, Evansville Museum Geek and Comic Con 2018. And there's all the information you would want to know is there.
So what kind of costumes will they wear, Todd?
I can only imagine they're probably anime characters, which maybe your audience wouldn't know, but there would be anime characters. I'm sure there will be a Superman. It wouldn't surprise me if there was a Batman. Joker is actually, people like to dress up as the Joker.
Yeah, you want to tell? Should we share our funny but kind of embarrassing story about we were at Metropolis a few weeks ago,
yeah. Metropolis, Illinois.
Metropolis, Illinois. So Superman, they have a Superman celebration because it's the only city in Evansville it's named Metropolis. So they take advantage of being, there's a giant Superman statue. So every year they do this big Superman celebration. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like our fall festival, but it's built around that. And there's all kinds of cosplay people. And right now, it seems like every five ladies dressed up as a Harley Quinn, and there's all kinds of variations of Harley Quinn. There's, you know, there's a cutesy Harley Quinn. There's kind of the skanky Harley Quinn, if I can say that. yeah. There's all these, you know, various versions. So we're walking down the street, Todd and I, and we see all these cosplay people, and we are freaked out because there's this one guy dressed up as this character called Metamorpho.
And then he's a real obscure character.
Really obscure.
Definitely.
From the 60s. I don't know if he's – I don't even know the last time he's in a series. And we're just like, can you believe that? There's a Metamorpho. So we motioned for him to come over so we can get a picture of him. But the girl, the Harley Quinn girl, thought she was motioning for us. And the Metamorpho guy thought so too because it's two guys motioning, you know. But it was just – we were just like stunned that you got a Metamorpho cosplay, you know. I mean,
well, what does a Metamorpho look like?
Well, shoot, I could show you the picture.
Well, you have to describe it.
Yeah.
He's
elemental.
He's Metamorpho the Element Man. So he's made up of the different elements. So he's like pasty white face, and he's purple and on this side.
Purple inside and green. You know, it's just a brown, and each part of his body is a different color.
Visually, which is not great on radio, visually, he's a very interesting looking character, very obscure. And
the guy was pretty old, too. That was
just a really unique character to have for cosplay. For the, like I say, you throw a dart and you can hit five Harley Quinns or Batmans or whatever it is. They're just all over the place. But then you see this really obscure character. It's just like, wow. Yeah.
What is Metamorpho's powers?
Whatever the elements could do. So, like, you know, he can squish and expand and do different sizes.
Become gas.
Yeah. 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 I mean, not that kind of gas, but gas, you know.
Well, that is okay.
And we're really like our geek flag show here.
Well, hopefully he'll show up.
You kind of have to be there sometimes, David.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Now, to still have the Star Wars people show up.
Oh, absolutely.
Chewbacca's and Star Wars and robots and, you know, just, you name it. Like I said, I mean, we never thought we'd ever see a Metamorpho, but yeah, you see all the just everything, and like I said, the materials out there, you could really make them super elaborate. I've seen some deluxe ones with lights on it and steam blowing out of them, and just it's just unbelievable.
Do you think, like you said, you have some professional cosplayers that just travel around the country?
Yes, yeah.
So they'll probably show up a couple of those.
Possibly, they never know. And then a lot of times these cosplay they'll be at their table and they actually raise money for charities usually because basically cosplay people, they want you to take their picture. I mean, they're there to show off their outfits and the creativity they've done.
So what got you guys hooked on comic books in the first place? Todd Fox, what do you
think? I think I'm like, my story's like any kid. You just go, your parents, I remember I have an older cousin who liked Spider-Man in the 60s, and I remember reading some of his, and I happen to remember seeing, this is one of the things too, David, about comic book fans. They can remember where they bought this particular issue or whatever. Oh yeah. So right over there on Covert, there was right off of 41, there was a drugstore, and I can remember buying a certain issue. My parents, rather, buying for me a certain issue of a Batman or whatever, you know. And I remember being in a barbershop and seeing an issue of Fantastic Four, things like that. And here's the other thing, David. On you can go online and find that cover, and you can find they've got the actual printing when it was published, and so you can find that it was published on October 3rd and this and that.
And when other comic books were out at the same time.
Yeah,
So are you a collector as well?
I still, not like I was, but I'm doing more trade paperbacks and things. Trade paperbacks are collections that they will, you still have your monthly comics, which are your basic pamphlets that they've always had. But now there is a market for collecting multiple issues of that and putting it in a trade paperback so you can put it on a bookshelf, and that's what you see over there at Barnes & Noble for the most part. And some of these things are really deluxe and have high production values and are real artful presentations. So,
Ted, what about you? How'd you get hooked?
Well, I think I've been trying to figure that out for quite a while, and I think it's my uncle. 5 years older than me, you know. I never had an older brother. Again, it seems like a lot of times it's, you know, either you're sick in bed and the parents bring it to you, or somebody older in your family has them. He had a whole smattering of Marvel comics that he had bought when they were stationed in England. His dad was in the Air Force, and my granddad was. And I think he had them, so I wanted to have them. So I think grandmother made him give up some of them to me, and I had this little smattering, and they were Marvel. And they were these just colorful Jack Kirby, Stig Ditko illustrated comic books, Stanley writing them. And I started I'd go to the drugstore, and I'd see these things. And I started with my own allowance, would start buying them. And what I found out, you know, you could you buy issue one, and then it'd be an issue two, and an issue three. And Marvel, Stanley had the idea where his stories would continue on. They were usually DC at the time was like the story was self-contained. But Marvel would make you buy the next issue.
Well, the serial.
Yeah, they could continue the serial. And so I think I've always just been drawn to visual. You know, I love movies and love of comics. It's just something about it. I quickly became enamored of certain artists. I go, I like this artwork. And then you find out the guy's name. Stanley started putting credits in comic books. Who drew it? Who inked it? Who lettered it? And you start following. Also, I start following artists and not characters.
Yeah, so there are certain points you kind of like. I like this comic over this comic more, and then you start to realize that maybe it's based on a creator or certain artwork or something like that.
Did you guys read Mad Magazine?
I did not. I think Ted did.
Yes.
I was into more what I called, you know, dramatic stuff like superheroes or whatever. But Mad Magazine was a comic, but it was funny. So therefore, for me, it wasn't as interesting. So.
But did you know Mad was a comic book originally?
No.
Yes. In fact, I even wrote that down. The first 23 issues of Mad were a comic book.
I did not know that.
And at the time, it's easy to think that they changed it over because they escaped the comic books code. There was a big crackdown on comic books in the 50s, and they thought they were messing up kids' minds.
Contributing to juvenile. Yeah. Oh, okay. Subversive, actually. Yeah. And contributing to juvenile delinquency. They had a big Senate hearing about it.
Oh, my goodness. And so, Mad was a part of the EC comics. And EC was Tales from the Crypt and these really gruesome horror film comic books. They were done well. That company did them well. There was like knockoffs that were terrible. They were just bloody stuff or bloody stuff. But Mad, Harvey Kurtzman, who created it, came up with it. He decided, I want to do more sophistication with it. So they converted it to a magazine. So when the crackdown came and the code came into being, and it pretty much eradicated the EC line of comics, but they had Mad Magazine. It was a magazine. It didn't have to go by the code. And then it slowly became this big cultural phenomenon. So when I came along in the 60s, it was a huge thing, you know, Mad. And I quickly discovered, wait a minute, this is kind of comic book stuff. And then I found out the history eventually. Then I would graduate the National Lampoon. That was another magazine that was even a little bit more sophisticated than Mad, But it had comic books in it, too. It had comic strips and stuff in it. That was a big draw for me.
Now, I was in college. I think I've talked to Ted about this before. Wonder Warthog was really a kind of a strange character. And I'm not really sure what Wonder Warthog did or represented, but it was just bizarre.
Well, you're talking about the undergrounds. And again, it's interesting. It all ties in together here. The kids that read those early Mads, and it was just a big deal when they in Mad as a comic book and a magazine started. It was a huge impact on kids and
culture.
And the culture. And here comes so all these kids now are teenagers, and they're in San Francisco and California, and they're hippies, and but they love comic books, so they start doing their own comic books called Undergrounds, and they publish them themselves. And Wonder Warthog is a product of that. Whereas they started doing, hey, I want to do a superhero, but you know, I want to have fun with it and go crazy with it. And there was all, you know, they would cover sex and politics and they would environmental issues and satire. And these guys grew up on Mad Comics and Mad Magazine. Now they're doing their own thing, and they were not doing it for the big companies. So there was no code. You could do whatever you wanted.
Well, it seems like they were high when they put these things together.
Oh yeah,
like,
yeah. Well, that's where Robert Crumb comes from. Keep on Trucking and Run to Warthog and all that stuff. That era.
That's part of the underground, which is obviously not part of the mainstream. They were, obviously reacting against the mainstream comic.
But eventually, the underground got sucked into the mainstream too. You know, and Zippy the Pinhead is from that era, and now it was a national comic strip in the newspapers. You know, and Robert Crumb is considered one of our cultural icons now. You know, and you know, it's just, and that's that mentality that was in the undergrounds. Is now a lot of in mainstream comics. It's incorporated into the story. I mean, dramatically and dealing with more serious issues as opposed to just beating up the Joker.
Here again, as these creators get of an age and they get into mainstream media, they don't have the prejudice against the medium and some of that source material that previous generations did, and that's how I think it's permeating the culture now.
So if you had an avatar, superhero avatar, what would that be, Ted? Haycraft?
Well, I mean, I do you want me to, I mean, I could tell you who my favorite character is.
Well,
I
that's
guess
fine.
Would that be my avatar? I guess I don't.
Sure. I guess one you would relate to.
I can relate to. Well, I tell you what, I can relate to, and that's one of the movies I'm playing is American Splendor. It's a guy named Harvey Picar. And he was just a regular guy, a civil servant, I think, a file clerk in a hospital.
In Cleveland.
Yeah. And he liked comic books, but he thought, I'm not doing superheroes. That's silly stuff. You know, that was his attitude toward it.
He just wanted to talk about his life.
Yeah. And so he would get other artists, Robert Crumb being one of them, and draw his life. One page could be about him and another guy in the elevator eating potato chips. And the last panel says, these are pretty good potato chips. And that's the story.
Non sequiturs. Yes.
This is like Seinfeld here.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, every medium has all these variations. And so I could really, I when I discovered that, you know, the light bulb went off. I'm like, wow, you could really, you know, and then there was a whole genre of biographical comics that exploded out of that.
So just go it yourself.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You really can.
Well, there was a mini comic revolution
in the 80s. Yeah.
Where you basically just take pieces of paper and you really crude artwork. If you couldn't be an artist, that's no big deal. As long as there's a story to be told, whatever, or your viewpoint, put it on paper, staple it. Go to Kinko's or whatever, put it together, and you could go to a comic book store and have to sell it. And people were buying it, you know. And some of these guys became professionals out of that.
You know, you were asking me about earlier about how I got into comics. I think that accessibility was part of it for me, because all you need is a piece of paper, a piece of scrap paper, and a pencil, and you can work. You can create stories in this medium. It's that accessible.
Think about this: you could do a $300 million movie in a comic book. With just, you know, paper and pen.
What would it cost in movie terms?
And you know, you got to feed the people, you got to bring the people, you got to costume it, you got to get them on location, you got, you know, you got a lighter, you got lighting people, you got all this stuff going on. Whereas Todd sitting in his home, in his studio, just sitting there drawing and just drawing huge, giant epic. And it's just a pen, paper, and a writing utensil.
Yeah, it's that accessible. It's just that simple and just that hard, I guess.
Now, the sci-fi fascination, this is part of Comic-Con, sci-fi, of course. I guess it goes back to Shelley's Frankenstein, maybe Bram Stoker's Dracula, H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
Those are touchstones for all of those, yes.
Slowly build up, you know. And again, it's just as every decade gets more sophisticated, and more kids that grow up on it are in the industry, it changes. So we get George Lucas with Star Wars in 1977, game changer. And I think we're all living under that Star Wars umbrella that, you know, science fiction now is just a given at the theater. And people that probably wouldn't even touch a science fiction paperback book or maybe don't even know who H.G. Wells or Jules Verne was, they're going to go see the new Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. So the sci-fi films, of course, E.T., Alien, Predator, what are your favorites?
Let's see. Of those, I would say, I guess probably Star Wars. I'm more of an adventure guy than, say, Alien is a horror. Yeah, right. I'm more of an adventure guy, so.
Yeah, I mean, I love it all, of course. You know, the Christopher Nolan with Inception and what was the Interstellar? That was really interesting. But 77, Star Wars came out. I was there. I was a graduate from high school. And I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun. But I was more a Close Encounters fan. Steven Spielberg in that same year. Mm-hmm. More realistic, different take on it than Star Wars. It was more fantasy and Flash Gordon, you know. So, but the Alien franchise, the first two are just masterpieces.
Mm-hmm. So is it the escape from reality? Is that what we're looking for here?
It's certainly that. And, you know, there is that aspect of it. And there's also the... the analog, there is the metaphor that science fiction is hugely useful for, to talk about events, current events, and, you know, to certainly to escape, but certainly to deal with current events and issues and things like that. It's always been that way.
A lot of end of the world scenarios.
Yeah, that goes in cycles. You know, because Mad Max, we've had some Mad Max, you know, earlier films, and yeah, that does go back.
Destruction of the environment.
We could find you. I could find you writers out there that they, you know, say that the what's going on in the cinema and comic books and other mediums reflect our times. You know, who's in office and what's going on in the world of events.
Mm-hmm. Well, my guests have been Todd Fox and Ted Haycraft, and we're talking about the Comic Con convention coming up at the Evansville Museum,
right, August 25th, August 26th. And there's a Facebook page for it. Check us out. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Definitely. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm going to leave you with a few memorable quotes from iconic fantasy and sci-fi movies. I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that. Of course, that's from Space Odyssey, yeah. 2001. Luke, I am your father. Star Wars.
Empire Strikes Back.
Very good.
Yes.
And of course, Live Long and Prosper.
Star Trek.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Spock.
And here's what I like too. Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Oh, yeah.
Planet of the Apes.
Classic. Planet of the Apes.
68. Yes.
Charlton Heston.
Yep.
And they keep on going back to, they keep on dipping back into that well. They just finished a three-part franchise on that.
Yeah, that's return now. Yeah. The Ape series. And those are really good.
They're really
yes.
good. Yeah.
The apes are so convincing now.
That's the technology is caught up to.
Yeah, any other favorite quotes, guys? I like those.
Oh, I was trying to think of some comic book quotes.
I don't know that you can beat. With great power comes great responsibility.
That is a good one. You know, that's a good one.
What's Wolverine with the bub? I don't, you know, he always, I can't think of. Let me mention something that, too about the movies. It's really interesting. There's a lot of movies out there that people don't even realize are comic books. Like, did you know Roper did Road to Perdition to Tom Hanks? That was a comic book.
I did not know that.
History of Violence with William Hurt and Viggo Mortensen. 300. About the Spartans.
That was really? I didn't know that.
That was a graphic novel.
Sin City. Those were
yeah, that's right.
Ghost World. A nice little character play of two girls. So there's a lot of, you know, it's amazing. There was even a recent film, a really big film, and I can't think it was based on a graphic novel. I was just like amazed. And these are not superhero ones, you know. So it's just an amazing world out there, comic books. You can find something of any kind of genre or material that might interest you. We could probably find it for you.
Well, that's a good way to end this discussion, guys. We appreciate your time and kind of explaining this whole culture of the comic book world. I know you could go on forever and ever.
I didn't even touch half my notes.
We can do a full part series on this if you
definitely
need to.
My guests have been, again, Todd Fox and Ted Haycraft. This is 2 Main Street, presented by Evansville Regional Airport. Both Todd and Ted mentioned a trip to Metropolis, Illinois, about a 2-hour drive from Evansville. Metropolis is the official home of the Man of Steel, as proclaimed by both DC Comics and the Illinois Legislature. If you go, besides the 15-foot-high, 2-ton statue of Superman, there's also the Super Museum, filled with 20,000 items of Superman memorabilia. Coming up on the next 2 Main Street, we'll march over to the Evansville Wartime Museum. It's a new and growing attraction filled with the machines of war and the personal stories of those who fought the battles and those on the home front who built the weapons that won World War II. And on future shows, join me for interviews with the folks who run Hangers. That's the clothing bank for children in the Evansville-Vandenberg County school system. Also a conversation with political cartoonist, historian, and professor James McLeod. And a chat with longtime TV news anchor Brad Berg. To Main Street on 88.3 WNIN-FM airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. And our interviews are also online at WNIN.org.